We have just heard one of the most intriguing passages in the entire Bible. Mark's conclusion to his gospel, Mark's telling of the Easter story. And what a strange story it is. At the break of dawn, as soon as the Sabbath was over, according to Mark, three women went to the tomb. And as they went to the tomb, they were trying to figure out how they were going to solve this problem that stood in the way of their doing what they intended to do, which was to anoint the body of Jesus, pay him this last honor. And the problem was that the tomb was covered by a big, heavy stone, and these were three women, and they didn't know how they were going to roll the stone away. But they went to the tomb. They figured something would work out. And when they got there, they found out that they needn't have worried about the problem, because, in fact, the stone had already been rolled away. And they went inside the tomb, and they weren't prepared for what they saw. There wasn't a body in the tomb. The tomb was empty. There was just the burial shroud bundled up and left aside. And there was a young man there who had a message for them. He said, "You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth? He is not dead. He is not here. But go and tell Peter and the others that he's gone ahead of you to Galilee just as he said." And then Mark ends his story this way. "And they fled from the tomb, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid." End of story. The curtain comes down. That's how Mark ends his gospel. And this raises many questions. The chief among them being, why would Mark end his gospel this way? What is the meaning of a story that ends up in the air with a message to be spoken, but a message that remains unspoken out of fear? Why would Mark end his story this way? I'd like you to hold on to that question for a few moments as we think about ourselves and where we find ourselves today. 50 weeks ago, on July the 4th, 2004, I preached my first sermon in this sanctuary. 50 weeks ago, we began a journey together, and none of us had any idea where that journey would take us, but I believe that God has been with us in our journey. One of the things that has come out of that journey is a great deal of appreciation and wonder and respect for who you are, who Bethany is as a congregation. And I'd like to share this morning some of the things that I have grown to love about Bethany. And the first is this. This is a small church. But we have an influence in our conference and in our denomination that goes far beyond our numbers. Somehow, Bethany has attracted people, remarkable people, who've done remarkable things. Just this past week at annual conference, any number of Bethany members had their names as a central part of what was going on in the life of the conference. One of those names, and I hope I don't embarrass him too badly, is Bob Carey. Bob, we were all surprised when it was announced that Bob Carey was the recipient of the Francis Asbury Award for his ministry over many years directing campus ministry in this annual conference. And it was noted how many thousands of lives have been touched because of the ministry that you supervised. And the whole conference rose and recognized you, and it's a shame that you couldn't have been there, but I want to convey that to you here. You know, you're very welcome. Thank you.
I'll have something more to say later. Not today.
Okay. Another name that was prominent at this year's annual conference was the name of Susan Griffin, who, first of all, was made a probationary member of the annual conference in preparation for her ultimate ordination as a deacon in the church. And she was consecrated to her ministry of practicing church law. And in addition, as if that were not enough, Susan presented two resolutions to the conference which are intended to help push us forward to more fully realizing the idea of an inclusive and all-inclusive ministry. And those two resolutions were passed by resounding majorities. Susan Griffin. You've already heard about Carolyn Talmadge and Susan Foster, who have been appointed to go forth from here into new ministries in San Francisco and in Bakersfield. Another name that was prominent in this year's annual conference was Bruce Pettit, who was a section leader that studied some of the legislation that was presented to the conference, and he led a group of laity and clergy in working through legislation before it came to the floor and was part of that presentation. And the last name that I would mention is the name of Nobu Hamoku, our new pastor, who was a big part of a DVD video presentation that the Conference Board of Ministries put together that we have a copy of, and I'll bring that to you. But also, he was a part of a presentation that was made to the whole conference to draw attention to what is coming up in August, the 60th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the conviction never to forget and never to allow this to go on again. Nobu was a victim of the bombing of Nagasaki and survived it somehow. And so we have a lot of members of this congregation who over the years have served in the annual conference, who have served in the wider church, who have helped change the direction of the life of the church. Another thing I really love about Bethany is that this is a place, a community with unapologetically progressive Christian values. And that is a real luxury for a pastor. I remember back when I was in seminary, back in the 70s. It doesn't seem possible, 30 years ago. But I did what all seminarians did. I would talk together with my fellow seminarians. We'd talk about what we believed. We'd talk about how we understood God's leading of the church and of the world. And we would all complain about our home churches and our fieldwork churches and how resistant they were to change. And so I speak out of experience when I say that it's a luxury to be a part of a place that holds on to and professes progressive Christian values. So don't take yourself for granted, because Bethany has the role of kind of being a fomenting ground for where the Spirit is leading the whole church. And in a generation, the struggles that we're going through today will be realized. Just like in the 70s, we were going through the idea, struggling with the idea of could women be ordained. Today, more than half of the clergy in the conference are probably women. It's become accepted. And what we're struggling with today in terms of the God's inclusive love for everyone will be more fully realized. It's like, as Jesus said, a woman who took yeast and mixed it in with 3 measures of flour, and in time the whole loaf rose. It didn't happen all at once. It didn't happen suddenly, but slowly over time, our effect is that of the fermenting yeast in a lump of dough that will permeate the entire church, us along with other progressive voices among the people of God. But most of all, what I appreciate about this congregation is you. You are such an intelligent, bright, articulate, forceful, passionate group of people. It's rare. The concentration of intelligent, dedicated people that I have encountered in you at Bethany. And I just want to celebrate all these things that I have come to know and love about you in the past year. I do want to talk a little bit about what I see as our growing edges as a congregation. And the first growing edge is this. I've heard a lot of people talk about the need for us to be re-energized as a church. I've heard people say that we need a strong, dynamic pastor to come in and energize us. In all due respect, pastors don't bring energy to the church. God gives energy to the church. Paul would say that it's the resurrection power, the power of the risen Christ that is in the whole community that gives us the energy to do ministry. Luke would say it's the wind of the Holy Spirit blowing over the whole church that enables us to go out into the world and change the world. The power comes from God, and the power is already in us. I stand in succession to a number of extraordinary pastors who have served this congregation. Chris Scheiber, Kim Smith, Karen Olivito, I know all three of them. You have had wonderful, effective pastors for a long time. I'm a very close friend of the pastor who's going to be here in 2 weeks, Nobu. And you will come to know Nobu as I have come to know him. He is such a wonderful man. Gentle and creative and inspiring and humble and strong. I think the word that, if you had to choose one word to describe Nobu, it would be beloved. I think he is universally beloved by the people who know him. He's just an extraordinary person. But Nobu's just a human being, and I'm just a human being, and so is Robin, and so are Kim and Chris. The power of God, the Spirit of God, is in the whole community. And all we can do as pastors is help you harness the power that's already inside of you. It's there. It's there. You just need to let it out. Which I guess brings me to the second growing edge, stewardship. The truth of the matter is we can do anything we want to do as a congregation. We can accomplish anything we really want to accomplish. The power is there, the resources are there. We can do it if we really want to do it. So the question is to discover what it is we really want to do. You remember Palm Sunday? We had 144 people in this sanctuary on Palm Sunday. Now, granted, we had three different churches worshiping together that Sunday. But remember what it felt like to have this room full, and when we sang, the place was filled with strong singing. And afterwards, when we had the coffee hour, to have a crowd of people sharing and eating and fellowshipping together. No, it felt like church. And we can have that if you really want to have that. And all it takes is to be committed to being present every Sunday and to inviting your friends and to let your excitement and your enthusiasm for Bethany and what it does in your life, share it with your friends. We can have 144 people in church every Sunday if you want to. What do you really want? We can do it. And in terms of financial stewardship, we're in a lot better shape than we were a year ago. We had 6 months of unpaid bills. We were struggling financially, and we're still struggling, but the bills are paid and we have money in the bank. And we've done that by being very fiscally responsible and adopting a policy that said, if we don't have the money to pay for it, we're not gonna do it. But my suspicion is that we want to do more than that. We want to do more than just pay the staff and pay for the lights and pay for the phones. We want to do ministry. We want to serve people. We want to reestablish an old Bethany tradition of paying 100% of our apportionments and supporting our share of the connectional ministries of our church. And we can do that if we want to do it. One last growing edge I'd like to draw our attention to. I would call it the word collegiality. We are full of passionate, idealistic, articulate, strong people. And you know what it's like when we get together. Every one of us wants to share our thoughts, share our feelings, share our vision, and have everybody else agree with us, right? When's the last time that happened? Collegiality. I'd like to give you a metaphor to think about. What is the purpose of a meeting when we come together? Is the purpose for me to come to that meeting and try to persuade you of what I think? Or is the purpose of our meeting together to discover the mind of Christ that is in the whole body? I think the mind of Christ is in the whole body, and each of us has something to contribute to determining what that is, but none of us has the total picture. I certainly don't. I don't think any of us do individually, but collectively, if we practice collegiality in our discussions together, if our goal is to discover the mind of Christ that is in us, then we can get there. And my hunch is that if we can develop a collegial leadership style, and if we can really get serious about stewardship, and if we can really embrace both of these things, we'll find the energy that we're seeking is there. Stewardship and collegiality. Well, I left you with a question. The question was, why did Mark end the Easter story the way he did? Why would Mark end his gospel with everything up in the air, with the story unfinished, with the word unspoken? And maybe Mark did it because that spoke to the situation of his church in the year 70. And maybe Mark did it because that describes the situation of Bethany in the year 2005. The tomb is empty. The power of Christ is alive and out in the world. God's message of inclusive love is available, but the message is unspoken. The message is unheard. And maybe that is because it takes people like you and me to overcome our fears and to speak that word to our neighbors, to our friends, to our co-workers, to one another. Maybe it's up to us to finish the story.